Here's a question for you, Chris. I know that we wanted to talk a little bit about just like things we've been watching lately in kind of these dead months when you and I haven't talked very much. Let's start with how many of the Oscar movies did you see?
Oh God, I think I only saw one. And that's awful. I saw Oppenheimer.
You saw
Yeah, a big
the most
one.
awards, I
Yeah.
guess.
I liked it. I thought it was good. I mean, it's kind of one of those movies we call Wikipedia movies that was just beautifully shot. And there's a place for that for sure. I just I heard Poor Things was amazing and I really wanted
We
to see
just
that. Oh, you did? Was
watched
it
Poor
good?
Things last weekend. It was great. That was really good. I also saw, you saw Barbie.
Oh yeah, I saw Barbie.
It's Oppenheimer, Barbie, Past Lives, which is a kind of a quiet movie, but it's really good.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I have not seen that.
I saw, well, man, what was there was another one I'd seen too. I feel like I worked through a good chunk of the list, and there was a lot of good stuff in there. Oh, The Holdovers, that was a good one.
That
Paul
is,
Giamatti was
yeah.
awesome.
I've had a group of friends of ours that are a couple. They're like, "That's gonna be our new Christmas movie." I'm like, "What? It's a Christmas movie?" They're like, "Well, it like takes place during that time, and it's got a heart." So I'm
It's got
like,
a moment.
"Sounds great. I love it. I'm in."
I've heard American Fiction is awesome. That might be what I watch next week, and that's one I hadn't gotten to yet. Killers of the Flower Moon, I feel like I need to set aside a full weekend because I'm not going to watch it in one sitting.
Yeah. Maestro,
I'm
I'm not
just
gonna
not
see
a
that.
I'm not a huge biopic fan to begin with. Like, Oppenheimer was fine. I didn't love it, and maybe it was partly for that reason. I will also say that I felt like, here's my hot take on Oppenheimer. I felt like Christopher Nolan made that movie and he was like, or he was writing the movie and he's like, oh, I need, this story is very man heavy. I need to put more women in this. So I'm gonna give bigger chunks of the movie to his mistress and his wife,
Yeah.
even though like they don't fully weave into, I felt like they're a little disjointed with the rest of the plot. And it was like, let's make sure we have representation in here, which that part's good, but I like have it feeling kind of tacked on, and it's not like they're represented in the best light. So I don't know. I don't know that it was my best picture of the year, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. We got great performances out of Florence Pugh and Emily Blunt. For sure, but I guess to me it was just another trying to show another layer of who Oppenheimer was, that he was like he was kind of a hot shot that had this life and his wife and I don't know, but it also to me was like 20, 30 minutes too long. I feel about a lot of movies.
Movies today are so long. I went and saw Dune 2 in theaters. It's, 2 hours and 45 minutes. Like,
So long.
no one has any, kids' movies are short. At least kids' movies are short. It'd be like 2 hour 45 minute
Yeah.
kids' movie would be brutal. Okay, aside from Oscars, what else have you been watching lately?
Well, we had a film festival here, a documentary film festival. So I watched a few documentaries, and thankfully, most of those are about 90 minutes. And the TV shows, definitely watched True Detective, Night Country.
I've not watched that yet.
I recommend it. I know that there's a lot of drama about the original creator talking trash on it, stuff like that, and questions and that are answered, all sorts of stuff around it. I thought it was well worth the time. I liked it. Also, Jodie Foster is great. And then started watching Yellow Jackets and Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I've watched the first episode of that with Donald Glover. Have you watched any? You've seen Yellow Jackets.
That's right. I finished season two probably a month ago. I loved that show. I thought it was great. It's nice because it's like it's got a little bit of the horror element to it, but there's also some humor. Christina Ricci just back in action. It's phenomenal. I feel like she didn't get enough attention for her role in that show.
They cast it really well. Even the younger like people, the younger girls versions of them are playing like versions of the adult actors. Like Melanie Lynskey's younger version like does certain things and affectations of like, wow, they picked the right people. And Juliette Lewis is just awesome. I'm a huge fan of Juliette Lewis, so.
Oh yeah,
And Christina Ricci since I was
that
12.
cast is awesome. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, her comeback, it's well deserved.
But you should check out Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I'll have to. I like Maya Erskine, who was from Pen 15, which was that Hulu show where she, her and her friend played middle schoolers, and then they like cast real middle schoolers around them to like, and it takes place in the 90s. It's
That's
it was a good
funny.
show. It was funny.
I wondered what that was about. originally it was supposed to be Phoebe Waller-Bridge who was going to be the main person, but creative differences led to the recasting.
Such an ominous term, creative differences.
Yeah, I think I think they've both been honest. They both wanted the show to go a certain direction and didn't agree. But the woman who stepped in to take Phoebe's place, who you were just talking about, is great. Like it's definitely a different show than if Phoebe had been in it, but she's doing great. I really like it. Recommend it.
She's awesome. I'll have to check that out. That sounds awesome.
You know what else we watched that everyone watched in October? American Horror Stories.
So we are here today to talk about season 3, episode 1 of American Horror Stories, which is only 4 episodes long. It's taken us some time to get around to it, mainly because, I don't know, life has been busy. Chris and I, intended and wanted to set the time to get together and think and talk about these things. And, one thing led to another. We're like, oh, the new year, things start going, you push things back. And here we are now. Today is March 12th, and we're going to talk about Bestie. Of course, part 2 of American Horror Story. Oh, we didn't even do our kickoff.
No, yeah, it's been a while.
Should we stop and do that really quick?
Do it.
Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to This American Horror Story, an unofficial podcast about the FX show American Horror Story and the sister show American Horror Stories. I am your host, Tyler Moss, here with my co-host.
Chris Husted, it's good to be back. We missed y'all. Hopefully you're all still doing well and happy and healthy like Tyler and I are.
Happy and healthy and good to be back. For those of you who fast-forwarded to the beginning, which, fair enough. Chris and I were just here saying that we are only now getting to season 3 of American Horror Stories, 4 episodes in American Horror Stories this season. But things came up, life pushed things back. We're excited to be here talking about episode 1, Bestie, with you today. We also are keeping an eye on, of course, part 2 of American Horror Story Delicate, which I believe comes back to us in April. We're eyeing April 3rd, Wednesday, April 3rd at 10 p.m. Eastern. I think it's only another 4 episodes. So, shorter season, because wasn't part 1 just 4 episodes as well?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so we're looking at an 8-episode season. Obviously, the writer's strike interrupted kind of the production that I think forced them to split it up in this way. So,
yeah, it must have, because the way that the final episode of part 1 ended felt not satisfactory.
Not like a mid-season cliffhanger or something like that.
Right.
So we'll be back, of course, to walk us through that show. Chris and I are going to try to get through, a couple episodes of American Horror Stories, if we can, before American Horror Story is back. One thing we were thinking is, we'll probably just, we'll get through the rest of American Horror Stories. Some of it might end up coming, after Delicate returns. So we're not kind of doing both shows at once. And at this point, you've probably already seen American Horror Story some time ago. So this isn't exactly timely or hot news for you. But
I just checked. It was actually 5 episodes. Sorry.
Okay. 5 episodes.
So part 1 was 5. Season.
Yeah. Cool. Cool. Okay. With that being said, Chris, first of all, I'll say happy to be back and happy to be talking to everybody. As always, if you do have questions or you want to reach out to us, you can do so at thisamericanhorrorstory@gmail.com. I do think, as far as our Facebook has gone, we might have been a little delinquent in responding to recent messages and things, so apologies there. I think we'll probably get back on that when this new episode releases. Before we dive into anything else, Chris, what are you drinking this evening? It's a Tuesday night here in March?
Yeah, I wasn't going to drink at all, but it's been so long since we've hung out that I had to go grab something. So I looked in my fridge and I pulled out a beer and I looked at the expiration date and it's about a year ago, which I think I was going to text you. Is that still good?
It depends on what kind of beer it is. Because if it's the kind of beer that's supposed to have like a strong hop flavor, it's probably...
It's a lager. Anyway, I didn't choose
that
it.
That would have been fine.
I didn't choose it just in case. So I grabbed the other thing, which was a bottle of white wine, Sauvignon Blanc from the fridge. So that's what I'm drinking. What are you drinking?
That sounds like a good choice too. I'm drinking a vodka soda with some bitters. So, happy Tuesday to you.
Mm. Real quick, I did dry January and I drank those golden ales, the non-alcoholic ones, a few times. throughout it to like watch the Super Bowl and stuff like that. Really tasty.
And non-alcoholic, I mean, non-alcoholic, everything is kind of taking off, but certainly yeah. non-alcoholic beer.
It was really good. One of my friends recommended it, and I was like, it gives you a little bit of a, like a, it tastes delicious. So you're like, ooh, I'm having a drink, but then you're just hydrating. So it's cool.
Yeah. Good for your anyway. Health. Good for if you want to, you know, feel like you're having something special on a weeknight. There you go.
Yeah.
I've been drinking a fair bit of decaf coffee too. So look at
ooh,
us.
Ooh, we're because, getting old.
Well, I had a serious coffee addiction, like multiple pots a day. That was not for my digestive system. So this is a good step for me. I'm still, I'm not entirely on decaf. I've just used it to pare back.
That's smart.
Yeah. I'm not like a homicide detective or anything. I don't need that coffee to keep me going. Speaking of homicide, American Horror Story, episode one, American Horror Stories, season 3, episode 1. This episode is called Bestie. Anything you want to say about the cast here, Chris? There's a lot of people in this particular episode that I don't know that are particularly well known. You know, main actress is named Emma Halleen, Halleen. But her IMDb doesn't have too much going on.
I think she was, I noticed, or I read that she was cast in a movie or performed in a movie that Lily Rabe directed.
Am I getting my, that Lily Rabe directed. Okay, sorry. Yeah. I was not getting my people mixed up. You're right. Which movie was the Lily Rabe movie? That's cool.
I don't know. I read it and I was like, I haven't heard of this movie, but that's pretty cool.
Well, that potentially that's where, it's called Downtown Owl. And it was directed by both Lily Rabe and her husband, Hamish Linklater, has been in some of those Mike Flanagan shows in the past.
Yeah.
And, the one that took, the one he played the priest in The One on the Island.
Yeah.
He's great. But so she. So that's cool. I might have checked that Ed Harris was in that movie. Right on. So Emma Halleen, then the bestie was played by Jessica Barden, who I think is an English actress. She did an excellent job. That was very creepy.
She was great.
I think she was in a pretty well-known show over for BBC or for Channel 4 called The End of the Fucking World.
Yeah, I haven't seen that, but I saw a lot of people were excited that was, they're like, what, that's her?
Yeah. So I think that she is a little bit more well-known, but obviously she was wearing a lot of makeup and stuff.
Yeah. She also is, I believe, married to Max Winkler, who directed this episode.
There you go. I didn't know they were married, so that's cool. And then, of course, our boy Jeff Hiller.
He's great. He's so different in this one than he was in NYC. So
a little bit nicer. In this one, not so murderous. Even though he had his creepy moments, I would say too. And Seth Gable, who plays the father in this episode, did you recognize him from anything else?
I didn't, but I couldn't. I did, but I couldn't place it. What is he in?
He played Pastor Walter in the American Horror Stories episode called Milkmaids.
I remember that. Yeah. Yep. Yep. That was a weird episode.
That was a weird episode. This episode's weird in its own right, but in a different way, I would say.
Yeah.
The writer of this was Joe Bacon or Bakken. I don't know exactly how you say it. Joe also writes episode 3 in American Horror Stories season 3 called Tapeworm, which we're not to yet, obviously. He's also a producer on this season of the Capote season happening right now, a feud, an associate producer. So, you know, I guess without further ado, let's dig into it a little bit. Do you want to kick us off?
No. Well, I can't remember how we opened it. I know that the credits are different.
It's the Macbeth performance is where we start. The high school Macbeth performance.
You take it.
Yeah, you know, they have this, like, it's one of the, I don't know if it's the only witch scene or one of the main witch scenes where there's like a cauldron and there's a spell and there's a bunch of people around there. It's a famous scene from Macbeth. And basically they start consuming whatever the like potion is in this cauldron, and all the kids start just like vomiting on stage. And I think Jeff Hiller, you see, is the director kind of off to the side, and he's like encouraging them on. And then you see everybody kind of come into the realization that this is not supposed to be happening. I think he even runs out on the stage and is like, this is not part of the show.
Yeah.
And then I believe, I think it's at that point that we cut to credits. I know that you and I, this is even a couple weeks old for us now because we've been trying to schedule this for some time. But I believe that it's at that point that we cut to credits. But I don't know about you. When I was watching this opening section, what came to mind for me was Carrie. Having like because it had the feeling of like a high school revenge scene where some kid is like been bullied or something like that, and it obviously that does end up kind of being the case. So potentially it's a bit of an homage, obviously. And Carrie, we're talking about, well, Carrie gets a bucket of blood dumped on
Pig's
her,
blood.
and then lights the school on fire. So it's kind of a reverse Carrie, I guess, in this situation when she's making all the kids vomit. But when you think about, like, I don't know, high school productions and stages and things, that's what jumped to mind for me. I don't know if what came to mind for you.
I wasn't sure if they were alive, to be honest, when I saw them spewing all that vomit and bile. I thought they were, it turns out that they just got sick because of her messing with them. She didn't kill them. But
Well,
I
it's
was,
serious enough later that the
but
ambulances come, so it's like it's not
exactly.
nothing.
Exactly. So it already, it's an interesting opening because it already sets the stakes of like where we're at with this high school and the bullying.
And then, of course, we kind of have a cut here to reflect back 3 months. And that's where we start with, the story of, a girl, Shelby, who we quickly find out basically recently lost her mother. And her and her father have relocated to a new town. I think it's for his job, if I remember correctly. But we find out that her mom had cancer. They're there for purposes of, starting off on a clean slate. Pretty classic, movie trope, especially for high school movies, I would say. At school, though, she like immediately gets teased a little bit, like over the top teased. I think it's choir class where this begins.
I have issues sometimes. Like th this is fine because obviously we need to establish that there's this dynamic in this high school. Shelby's picked on. She's different. She's weird. And there's the cool girls that are mean. This is we see this a ton of times. But it is a little over the top and cruel and just almost like juvenile, like not like you're not teasing someone for their glasses when you're 17, I feel like, or 16. That's just really not intelligent or sophisticated bullying. Does that make sense? Sophisticated bullying.
Yeah, no, it seems a little juvenile for, especially because they're supposed to be like juniors or seniors, like, and I think one thing though that turns the trope on its head a little bit is that in the midst of the teasing, like immediately she like throws a pretty heavy book at one of the girls. Like she is not afraid to retaliate, which is not always the case when it's the girl being picked on,
I thought that was gonna be a hallucination. It was not. Turns out it was not. She did not nail her in the nose.
She nailed her in the nose. And look, I mean, I think clearly she has a lot of pent-up rage. And fair enough from what she's been through. And that's where we kind of see it reflected for the first time. The teacher played by Jeff Hiller kind of takes her into the office. We think that maybe she's going to be punished. And that's not the case. He's like, I used to know your mom because she was her mother, it sounds like, was also a music teacher. And they like met at a conference or something like that. He right here at this like the kind of this first moment, he tries to relate to her and the loss she's had with her mom by telling her about the fact that him and his wife had a stillborn baby in a pretty graphic and kind of awful way. I think he talks about like in some gruesome detail about the umbilical cord being wrapped around the baby's neck.
Yeah, this immediately put me on a little bit of edge just because that's very graphic to describe to a high school student just to try to connect with them. I understand what he's trying to do here, but because it's so dark, you can also be a little skeptical of the teacher as a character, I think. Like, what's going on with this dude? And Jeff Miller's great at being portraying a little creepy.
As I was going to say, is it establishes them both as like being like trying to reach out and be nice, but also being somewhat socially awkward. And like at this point in time, I think, as a viewer, you're kind of not sure if he's going to be, an ally to her or not really.
Which is great, smart, really establishes some character beats that are put us all on edge and leaves you a little tense about trusting anyone or anything. which totally. We get a lot of this episode, and it's great when they do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, back at home, Shelby's struggling. She gets mad at her dad really easily. You know, we continue to see like her struggling to like process her trauma, obviously, and really only finds a release when she watches these YouTube videos of her favorite star, Anorexia, who, how would you describe these videos? They're like, they're videos that are kind of, obviously they feel very genuine and raw, but they're kind of also intended to promote self-confidence or, you know, I think there's a monologue that Anorexia gives in one of the videos about how they came across their, the way that they kind of came to their name was that they were anorexic and decided that like they would have their drag name be Anorexia as a way to kind of like own their condition almost in an empowering way. And that's kind of bringing something about that kind of seems to bring Shelby some strength, you know?
Yeah. It gives me part influencer vibes, part evangelical preacher on the TV. And like, was it X when we watched that? And then also survival, like taking ownership over the word that took anorexia down so much is powerful. And how do you gain that power to fight your demons and beat your demons? I love, and we could do a whole like episode on language and how language evolves and how you, ownership of words change and how we use certain words today. Like I'm very fascinated by that. Also because anorexia's like theme or motto is life's a drag when you're a F word. So instead be dead, which sounds awful, like, but it's one of those like powerful, like I'm taking ownership over this type of a statement. There's probably a lot more to talk about it that I didn't pick up on, but it was very jarring to hear that word so many times and to talk like hear this conversation. And also sort of see a drag queen in a, to me, at least a less positive light, where this is like influencing some people maybe in the wrong direction. I don't think there's a fine line, but there is a line maybe. And this one's a little off-putting, unsettling. That's a better word for it. It's a little unsettling where I'm not getting, I'm worried for Shelby being so invested in this person and hearing this message. I sound like a dad.
No, I hear you. I think it's not black and white to suss out like how, you know, the power of a video like this. There's intricacy to it. And I think what I mean by that is like, obviously for Shelby, it's a form of like almost like catharsis, right?
Yes.
And it makes her feel like a part of a community. And to that extent, it seems that the only outlet she really has at this point in time to, you know, appreciate that she has some kind of release in a very dark time. But then again, also it's how she goes about kind of through this meeting her bestie. And we obviously know how that goes. So let's talk through it though for a moment. One time, you know, she's watching one of the videos, everybody else leaves. There's only two viewers left. And in the like YouTube chat, someone messages her. And they start kind of going back and forth, talking about how much they love anorexia. And the bestie invites her to video chat. And she's kind of a little bit at first nervous about doing it, but
smart girl.
Smart girl. And she ends up doing it. And she like video chats, I guess, the bestie. And I don't think we ever get a different name other than wanting to just be called bestie.
Yeah. She doesn't want to use names. So they decide that they're going to call each other nicknames, Shelly Belly and Bestie.
Right. And Bestie has some medical conditions, as we understand it. And it's not entirely clear at the outset. It's just, obviously, her physical appearance indicates that she's got some things going on. When I, you know, first saw Bestie show up, did it make you think of any other kind of horror movies?
Ooh. I mean, a little bit. The Hills Have Eyes.
That's what I was thinking.
Oh, really?
Too. Yeah, that's nice. What I was asking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then I felt awful thinking that too, because you know, this, I don't know Bessie's condition. I'm obviously she's disabled. Sure. But yeah, no, I was, and then I was like, oh Lord, where's Ryan Murphy going with this? You know, but it was very like, oh gosh, you weren't expecting that. Which was great for this episode. Like it was kind of like, oh, I have no idea where this is going to go. Mm-hmm. But yes, Hills Have Eyes. Okay. Good.
Yes. Okay. And subsequently they hit it off and they start the very beginning of what kind of becomes a pattern in which Bestie effectively manipulates the wrong word, but encourages, well, maybe it's not the wrong word by the end of it, but Bestie encourages Shelby to indulge in behavior that she would not normally do. And the first one being just kind of wearing really intense and dramatic makeup to school.
I think she does her makeup like anorexia, and then she's like, I look stupid. She's like, look, you look great. Wear it to school. But also, oh yeah, so this is probably where you're going, but Bessie always says, remember her like motto or whatever, which is anorexia always says, when you're scared of something, that's the thing you're supposed to do or that you should do. I wrote it down. If you face your fears, awesome things will happen.
I mean, and it's kind of like, it's kind of a little bit twisting the concept of like how anorexia calls herself anorexia, but you know, and owns that name. It's kind of like, if you own your fear, you can do anything basically and empower you.
Yeah.
So, you know, and in this particular instance, it kind of works well for her. She like feels kind of more confident at school. The teacher convinces her to come out for Macbeth. She gives the bullies a sick burn of some kind.
I forget. Yeah, it was good. It was good. But like, she's got this confidence and you kind of feel happy for Shelby in a way.
You do. And so that first interaction is not so bad, but then quickly it starts to get a little bit more sinister. Just like baby steps there. Bestie convinces Shelby to screw with her dad by hiding the dead mother's mug, in theory, obviously Shelby would have some emotions tied to as well, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. This is the first one with Shelby wearing the makeup, asking her to do that. It's like kind of like, okay. And then now she's messing with her dad's like dead spouse. Like it's really like testing. So we know at this point as viewers that something is definitely off with Bestie. She has some ulterior motive going on here because she's making her do things that a nice person would not do. And not even a nice person, just like a non-asshole would do.
Exactly. And then which it leads to
breaking
the mug.
Yeah.
It's like a dramatic, you can't come back from that, obviously. Well, she ends up gluing it together later. Yeah. But it feels like a you can't come back from it action.
Yeah. It's one of those things that like maybe if your therapist was helping you work through something and that seemed like a logical thing, but this is just like a dare, essentially. Yeah.
Well, and obviously it does mean a lot to the father too. So that's kind of
a quick pause. He could have done a lot more in this episode. I felt like he half tried everything. Like,
well,
he
would just locking, like, locking his daughter in the basement was probably
he needs
not
to talk.
The best move.
They should have been in therapy, like more so. I don't know, like at least he needed to talk to her a lot more than the quick moments at the breakfast table or whatever. Be like, okay, like, no, she's clearly like really struggling, man.
Yeah, maybe family therapy would have been a good one for them.
But then we wouldn't have this episode. So
then we wouldn't have this episode. Meanwhile, Shelby gets more intimate with Bestie. She asks Bestie what happened to her. And that's when Bestie tells Shelby that she's adopted and that her mom did drugs while being pregnant. She convinces her to go egging. She convinces her to shoplift. She's a little bit being kind of a little devil on her shoulder, really, is where this goes. And finally, kind of the not culmination, but we're getting close as we move past those 3 months back to Macbeth, where we learn she didn't get a part in Macbeth after all, even though she'd been invited to participate, or to Jeff Hiller had invited her to what's the word I'm looking for? Audition.
Mm-hmm.
And so she poisons the entire cast. And of course, she like watches from the bushes as a bunch of ambulances come and things like that. The real kind of, I don't know. Well, I was going to say this is kind of the ultimate thing too, but even this was not the ultimate thing. When she goes to school, was it on Halloween or was it just?
Ooh, I don't remember.
Because everyone else,
oh, it,
other people
I,
were.
Yeah, it was Halloween, I think. It was Halloween.
People were in costumes too. I didn't write down whether that was Halloween. But she goes to school for Halloween, I guess, dressed as the teacher's dead baby with the umbilical cord wrapped around its neck. And that's pretty disturbing.
I watched the sequence and then I saw the teacher react. And I didn't, I mean, I thought she was just doing something really morbid or just like, unless she had like the words of anorexia like on her outfit. I had to go back and watch it and to realize what she actually was doing in this situation. I didn't really understand it. And this is just 10 steps too far.
Yeah.
Unforgivable in the moment, I think, but not according to the teacher, who is a heart of gold.
I mean, I thought, but it was authentic. I felt like Jeff Hiller was well acted in this moment. Like, you see kind of the look of recognition cross his face. And then the scene in the, I don't remember if it was in the principal's office or if he has a separate conversation before where he's basically like, you know, I know you've been through a lot.
You've been through trauma. Like, that is so mature, and obviously he's a grown up and stuff like that, but to recognize in a teenager who is trying to process their own trauma and also high school. And I mean, not that she should be punished a little bit, but.
Right. Well, so, you know, the dad doesn't know what to do with her. He ends up locking her in the basement, and it's there that she finds a box of her mom's like old things, which I thought for a moment this is going to be like a touching thing where she finds something in the box that like reminds her of her mom. But instead, she finds an old laptop, and that's where she's able to reach back out to Bestie.
God damn.
And man, this scene was a little bit grotesque. I had to watch when Bestie convinces, like, there had to have been a better solution. And like, come on, Shelby, you can't think of a different way to get your dad's attention than violently breaking your own like wrist.
I feel like Ryan Murphy was like, we need some body horror in this episode. We haven't had anything yet. We had barfing and that's it. Ugh. Break your arm.
Yeah, this was graphic and a little bit hard to watch.
I had to look away.
But it is the
it does work.
I was gonna say it's the breaking point for her, not to I guess pun intended there.
I like it.
But yeah, I think you almost see it in Shelby's eyes that she knows she's crossing a line even as she's doing it, but she feels like she has to because Bestie's using the anorexia line on her.
Yep.
So Shelby starts, like, this is when everything starts to take a turn, you know? She starts counseling, she starts meds, she glues the mug back together. She brings in flowers to Mr. Nevins, even though she learns that he's like out for the semester. So she ends up arranging to have like a choir go sing outside his house to try to get him to come back to school and everything. So she's being really,
she's turned around.
Empathic. Yeah. Bestie continues to text her, of course. And then she just continues to ignore the texts. And that's when she meets River. And
He's been like lingering around a little bit in the choir.
He's been in choir class, kind of like not reacted well to when she's been bullied a little bit.
Yeah.
Who we learn also is also a fan of anorexia, right?
Yeah. That's how they connect.
And River ends up helping. It starts a little creepy because they run into each other in the hall, and then, you know, he gets her phone number and immediately texts her to like meet him in the theater from an unknown number. And like, she thinks it's Bestie, right? And it ends up being River just like screwing with her a little bit.
Yeah.
Question for you. Did you have suspicions about River early on?
I didn't at this point. I actually thought he would be the trope of like the nice guy in the background who would help her in the end, and sort of shows that to be the case in the beginning a little bit, with the exception of the text to meet me in a different place. That was the writing in this does a good enough job of showing people who traditionally are going to be good people that try to help a character like Shelby, like the teacher, or another kind of loner friend, are also just a little bit off. There's just something there that you don't trust them completely to be that person that we're used to seeing, the trope. So I thought he was going to be a good guy, and I thought but then that one thing happened, and I was like, I wasn't completely sure. I didn't think it would turn out the way it did.
Right. Well, she thinks that maybe he's trying to blackmail her, but he says that's not the case. He was also bullied. But he saw her poison the kids at Macbeth is what he's basically telling her, but he's not going to hold it against her. He was bullied by them too. He thought it was cool. He talks about his own disability and how he was bullied from that when he was younger. And you know, as best he continues to start texting threats, River helps block her. And you know, they end up having her and River. I guess we don't know how much time elapses at this point because they don't say, but right. We learn that her and River are close. They both get into Oberlin, which is where River's going. So she wants to go where River's going. It's around that time too that I think she in maybe the library or something like that, where so it takes some time before she finally tells River about Bestie because she's like embarrassed by it basically.
Yeah.
And he deletes her from all her devices. He says finally feels like she's free. So she's going to Oberlin. They're both going to Oberlin. And that's when River decides he wants to surprise her with a drive somewhere rural. This all begins to feel incredibly weird as this is happening. He drives her somewhere where they don't know where they're going. It ends up being what looks like some kind of abandoned neighborhood where all the houses are behind a locked chain link fence that he happens to have a key to. I guess the fact that she's not asking questions reflects the same relationship that she had with Bestie, where she doesn't ask enough questions and just kind of follows what people tell her to do, unfortunately.
Yeah. River seems to have been, you know, he's kind of, well, if you're listening to this, you kind of know what happens, but he played the longer game. But the same thing kind of happens here, where Shelby starts trusting someone because they have a shared connection. But River's a little more less aggressive with it until he tries to get her to go to the end of this house. Then he gets real pushy. And then I was like, I don't trust this dude.
Well, so, you know, and obviously as viewers were like, it's obviously Bestie's house. Like, why is she?
Yeah.
I mean, but that's obviously a classic movie trope. Don't go in there.
Yeah.
And you know, Bestie's there. River stabs her. Right?
They did a great job with this, by the way. Like, Bestie comes down the stairs all creepy and with the wig and like the Farrah Fawcett outfit. Like, it's very, she looks very 70s. Like, you know, the because her wig was very like the feathered flip out thing, and it was a choice, and I'm curious why they chose to go with that look and outfit. Her coming down the stairs and then River like turning on Shelby, it was kind of like a wait what moment.
Oh, I mean, there's, yes, it's a lot of wait what moment, because you're like, for also, is does Bestie live by herself? Because she kept talking about her parents.
And how does she get internet? This place looks like completely like blighted.
Starlink, you know, she's
Starlink.
but that's, yes. And so Shelby dies. River and Bestie like walk out behind the house and like walking toward like, it almost looks like a cliff or something like that. Like, I don't know. There's this episode ends with so many questions.
Horribly. Horribly. Like,
first of all, what a long game for River to play to get to this point.
Yeah.
But also, like, how did Bestie know? I mean, I guess Shelby told her at one point where she lives, apparently. But also, how did Bestie know that River knew Shelby and had class with her? That, like, there's a lot of questions. Why is River drawn to Bestie? You know, doesn't entirely make sense. I mean, yeah. It must have been through anorexia as well. What does River gain by killing Shelby? What are him and Bestie gonna do now that Shelby's dead? How does Bestie get groceries? Does River provide her? There's so many questions about the end of this that did not make sense to me. I was hoping you had some answers, but it doesn't sound like you do.
I have some ideas, and I have some ideas way this should have ended. And I also think this is one time I may ever say this, but this is an episode that could have used another 20 minutes to answer something, or just give us a little bit more. We don't need everything answered, for sure, right? We That's fine. I love some ambiguity. Keep us thinking, keep us talking about theories, but we needed just a little bit more concrete of some stuff. And like, I have some ideas, but like, also the ending, they built it up. It's the first 85, 90% of this movie, 90% of this movie, I think is really, or this show, the episode is really good. It's tense. There's a lot of psychological terror in what's happening to who.
The acting is very good.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. it's just, it's it, for a high school movie that I was kind of like rolling my eyes at the beginning at 20 minutes in, I was like, this is pretty good. This is a good episode. I'm into it. I do think River was a little underdeveloped.
Yeah.
But so here's a few ways that when I was watching it that I thought it could go. And then a few others that I, in some of my research, that I saw other people online saying like that, what they thought it was going to go. I thought that this is turning into one of those like truth or dare type movies where Bessie just kept upping her challenges until Shelby ends up like killing someone or killing herself, or, you know, like where it just escalates to something because Bessie was using her as her proxy for getting her revenge, just living whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that really wasn't the case, it seems. She was just doing this because we don't know why. Other ways the story could have gone, body swapping. I saw that and I was like, oh, yes. That would have been mm-hmm. really great.
Mm-hmm.
Like Get Out, you know, where obviously
Unbreakable.
Well, where we have a main character who is obviously disabled and finds an able-bodied person to become the vessel for whatever, or however it works. So that was one. One that I saw that I love is that Bessie was actually the baby that survived from the umbilical cord from the teacher. And because she said her mom did drugs and she was adopted, so maybe the teacher wasn't telling the full story. I don't know if that lines up age-wise, because we have no idea how old Bessie is. She could be a teenager. She could be 50, 60.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, the age is ambiguous.
Mm-hmm. I also have we talked about Barbarian, the show, right? Or the movie on Netflix?
I feel like we've talked about it on a past one, because you and I both seen it, right?
Yes, yeah. It's so good. I loved it. That's also like a show that's like just comes out of left field for the first third and then the second third. It's just wild. And I was like, oh, maybe there's some like backstory about this, like, you know, dilapidated community and something about it that we'll learn a little bit about to know why that she's here, Bessie's here and lives in this world and has.
And that kind of fits with what you and I were recognizing about like The Hills Have Eyes, which is like, you know, people who are like the victims of incest and stuff like that, right?
Yep. And radioactive plants mm-hmm. and radiation and whatever. There's a lot of,
well, there's definitely something going on with where she's living where it's like it's abandoned for some reason, right?
Yeah, so like the Barbarian twist of like what happened to that neighborhood, that could have been something that gave us a little bit of more of like, oh, just a little bit about what's going on, because I think Barbarian does a great job of that. And then the one I saw that I was like, okay, this is a little off the rocker, but that Bessie is actually like a future version of Shelby, and like something happens and like in that house and she sets a fire or something like that, and then she kind of gets burnt, and then she's actually, and she's communicating with her younger version for her older version. And I was like, that's a little too challenging for this isn't like Loki. That's a little too challenging for American Horror Stories, but I was like, that would have been a cool direction too. Like, there's so many things that were set up that it could have gone with if we had 15 or 20 more minutes, or just reworked a little bit of what we did have, that the ending wouldn't have just been like, well, come on, that sucks. She just dies and that's it. And then River walks off with Bessie and we have no idea anything. Like
you're totally right. It's like, we're missing minimum 10 minutes more context. Like, there's and it could have been ambiguous too. It could have better laid the ground for it to be any of these things, but for us to have no clue at all is a little bit frustrating, because I like, it does feel like it didn't, you know, we always say whether or not something sticks to landing, it was pretty strong throughout. Like, it was a good routine up until the end.
There was a lot of drama and tension, and I was, like I said, we started watching and I was like, ah, this is gonna be stupid, and then 20 minutes in, I'm like, this is pretty good.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. So
kudos
shit,
to the writer.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch Tapeworm later in the season.
Yeah.
So yeah, reflecting on this, I don't know what rating should we do? Boiling kettles of poison. What do you?
What is it?
Ominous text messages.
Well, let me ask you a question first. What do you think the message is on this episode? Like, what's like a good, what's like the takeaway? Because, you know, horror movies have messages. They don't have to, but smart ones, elevated ones, have messages and takeaways or commentary on something in society. We talked a little bit, and I didn't really mention this too much, but I do think there are maybe some issues with ableism in this. Like, the two people with disabilities are evil in the end. And
yeah, no kidding.
That's a little,
I mean, and you do wonder, like, from a standpoint, like, is that where we believe that they somehow met each other, was through
good point
disability, you know? Yeah, that's
they all
point.
yeah. So I mean, obviously Bestie seems to target lonely people who maybe have experienced or are grieving and experienced loss, and they're just very vulnerable, and are bullied or whatever. So she's a predator in that sense. But yeah, again, like I said, like, so that is worth a conversation, I think. And I don't know if that was part of what the, like, it's a, that's problematic.
I mean, when I think of what the message could be, I think one of the more obvious ones that comes to me is that, like, Shelby never learned to, like, live on her own terms, like, live, you know what I mean? Like, she's always, whether it was, I mean, we don't know this, but you kind of, like, obviously she's grieving her mother. You don't know how close she was with her mom or whatever at that before this, but she's, you know, like, attaches herself to Bestie, and kind of goes, like, to such extremes to maintain that relationship.
Yeah.
Only to,
that's a good point.
Even as she recovers, moves to this, a similar thing with River, even though it's not obviously as devastating to her life. You know, she decides where she's going to go to school simply so they can be together, not based on living her own life and anything she's trying to do or achieve in her life. And that ultimately ends up leading to her demise because she's just kind of like a terminal follower, you know?
She never did anything for herself or tried to kind of, she sort of tried to discover her own identity following anorexia, sort of.
But even then she was following anorexia.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. She never really stepped out to, which Mr. I was going to say Mr. Hiller, Jeff Hiller. I don't know what his name is.
Mr. Nevin, I think.
Mr. Nevin. Yeah. He seemed like he could have actually been the person to try to help her explore and grow, and in a way that high school teachers often help a lot of us do. I think what you just said there is exactly what it is how easily manipulated some people can be, and how if you don't try to step out and find your own path or interests and things that aren't defined by following another person, that you'll die.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if it's intended to be a bigger message that all is about influencers or about social media, you know. You could extrapolate it to mean those things, but I think at the end of the day, you know, you can be a follower, you can be a terminal follower online, you can be a terminal follower IRL, you know.
For once, this wasn't heavy-handed, you know? Like, I didn't feel knocked over the head with, like, make sure you remember this, and this was happening, and this person is this. There was enough, it was vague enough on certain characters and what was happening that I was, again, for American Horror Story, I was impressed.
Yeah.
I still don't know what to give this yet. How many likes? No. Cauldrons? No. How many
broken mugs?
Oh, that's sad.
Better than broken wrists.
Or babies.
We're not gonna do that one either.
No. How many Farrah Fawcett wigs?
Possibly.
We'll do broken mugs.
Okay. How many broken
Mugs out of five.
Teacher of the Year mugs.
Yeah, I give a Teacher of the Year. Is that what that's what her mug
it's
said?
It's a Teacher of the Year. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So heartbreaking. I give this 4 out of 5 mugs. Best Teacher of the Year, because especially grading this on the American Horror Stories curve. Actually, grading this on American Horror Stories curve, I would bump it up a little higher. But I'm gonna give this 4 out of 5. I think this was a good episode. I really did. The ending just didn't land. It left me kind of bummed out and upset that we didn't get a little bit more, because there was so much there mm-hmm. that they built up on that I want the director's cut.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was going to give it 4 as well. I was like really debating 4.25,
mm-hmm.
but you and I talking about the end again and like, how much it feels like we're just missing just a little bit more is tough. So I think, 8 out of 10 is solid.
That's good for American Horror Stories.
Yeah, that was that. It was an entertaining episode. You give it that. It was an entertaining episode that I don't regret watching, even if I do feel like I wish we had a little bit more in the end to tie things together. Not with a perfectly neat bow, but with just a loose, shabby bow.
I'm going to say, like, as a professional editor now, where I don't have to always do my own stories, I work with people on their own stories. This is like what we do. We don't have to like write the stories, but we can like help them improve it, you know, by pointing out some things or tweak this here, add a moment in here. We can't leave this part hanging. We need to tie one thread up, not all of them, but one of them.
Professional story doctors, yeah. Bring us an American Horror Story.
Any horror people want to work with us, we are actually professional journalists, so we know how to tell a story. But this is our specialty that we don't get to dabble in, except with all of you fine folks.
Indeed. That was a fun one. I'm curious to see what the rest of the season holds, and of course, again, we've got a Delicate coming back here in less than a month. In April. So between now and then, folks, if you would like to reach out to us and share your thoughts or your feelings or your questions on anything related to this episode or upcoming American Horror Story Delicate episodes, go ahead and reach out to us at thisamericanhorrorstory@gmail.com, or you could go ahead and message us on Facebook and, comment on the post that we will put up when we release this episode, and we will be more on top of our communications. So apologies for that, and thank you already for continuing to listen. I don't know, Chris, anything you want to wrap this with?
No, just happy to be back. Thanks for sticking around, if you guys are all still there during our hiatus. And we'll be back. We got more stuff to come.
Sounds good. Thanks to everybody again. Have a good evening, and until next time, happy hauntings.